This could have occurred nowhere but in England, where man and sea interpenetrate, so to speak, the sea entering into the life of most men, and the men knowing something or everything about the sea, in the way of amusement, of travel, or of breadwinning. We were sitting round a mahogany table that reflected the bottle, the claret glasses, and our faces as we leaned on our elbows. There was a director of companies, an accountant, a lawyer, Marlowe, and myself. We all began life in the merchant service, and between the five of us there was the strong bond of the sea. Marlowe told the story, or rather the chronicle, of a voyage. Yes, I have seen a little of the eastern seas, but what I remember best is my first voyage there. You fellows know there are those voyages that seem ordered for the illustration of life, that might stand for a symbol of existence. You fight, work, sweat, nearly kill yourself, sometimes do kill yourself, trying to accomplish something, and you can't. It was altogether a memorable affair. It was my first voyage to the East, and my first voyage as second mate. It was also my skipper's first command. You'll admit it was time. He was 60 of a day, a little man, with a broad, not very straight back, with bowed shoulders, and one leg more bandy than the other. He had that queer, twisted-about appearance that you see so often in men who work in the fields. And he had blue eyes in that old face of his, which were amazingly like a boy's, with that candid expression some quite common men preserve to the end of their days. What induced him to accept me was a wonder. I had come out of a crack Australian clipper, where I had been third officer, and he seemed to have a prejudice against crack clippers as aristocratic and high-toned. He said to me, "You know, in this ship you will have to work." I joined next day. It was 22 years ago, and I was just 20. How time passes. It was one of the happiest days of my life. Fancy, second mate for the first time, a really responsible officer. The mate looked me over carefully. He was also an old chap, but of another stamp. He had a Roman nose, a snow-white long beard, and his name was Mahon. But he insisted that it should be pronounced Man. He was well connected, yet there was something wrong with his luck, and he never got on. As to the captain, he had been for years in coasters, then in the Mediterranean, and last in the West Indian trade. Both were thorough good seamen, of course, and between those two old chaps I felt like a small boy between two grandfathers. The ship also was old. Her name was the Judea. Queer name, isn't it? She'd been laid up in Shadwell Basin for ever so long. You can imagine her state. She was all rust, dust, grime, soot aloft, dirt on deck. To me it was like coming out of a palace into a ruined cottage. She was about 400 tons, had a primitive windlass, wooden latches to the doors, and not a bit of brass about her, and a big square stern. There was on it, below her name in big letters, a lot of scroll work with the gilt off, and some sort of coat of arms with the motto, "Do or Die," underneath. I remember it took my fancy immensely. There was a touch of romance about it, something that made me love the old thing, something that appealed to my youth. We left London in ballast, sand ballast, to load a cargo of coal in a northern port for Bangkok. Bangkok. I thrilled. I had been 6 years at sea, but had only seen Melbourne and Sydney. Very good places, charming places in their way. But Bangkok. We were a week working up as far as Yarmouth Roads, and then we got into a gale. The famous October gale of 22 years ago. It was wind, lightning, sleet, snow, and a terrific sea. We were flying light, and you may imagine how bad it was when I tell you we had smashed bulwarks and a flooded deck.